This is Phil Farrand. And I am driving around. I was going to go for a walk today, but as you can hear, it's raining. Looks like it's going to rain for the rest of the afternoon. So no sunbathing. No time in the sun this afternoon. No working on the lane this afternoon. Can't really even work out in the garage on Mr. Potato Head because we don't have powers. We lost power about 15 minutes ago. There's been thunderstorms in the area. I'm sure a transformer got hit or something like that. Or somebody skidded off a road and hit a pole. But you know, that is what is. So, I'm in my dad's old preacher car. We'll just drive around for a little bit. Thankfully, while cars do require power, they don't require power from the local power company. So, all is well. I am having a little gastrointestinal distress today. I was listening to a podcast about some studies that had been done on the number of hours that you fast and where the sweet spots are. Unfortunately, the study had been done by only taking readings every morning. So they really only got decent readings at 24 hours, 48 hours, 72 hours. They did have people on a water fast for an entire week. They were monitoring them for an entire week. I think they had like 17 individuals or 14 individuals, healthy individuals, that they had put on a water fast for a week. And there was some really useful information that they saw some kind of dramatic changes in metabolism and in certain levels. They called it a reprogramming of the body's functioning at 72 hours. Now, since they're only testing once a day, you don't know when that really kicks in. And I was always told it kicked in at about 52, 54 hours. So when I do a fast and I stop eating on Sunday night, I usually stop eating around 5:30, 6, something like that, and then start again on Wednesday around 2:30. So there's about a 4-hour difference there for it actually being a 72-hour fast, which might be fine, but certainly can't be proven one way or another from this study, since they only measured people every 24 hours. But I thought, well, let's just try to do a 72 and see if I feel any different. So I did a 72 this week, stopped eating around 5:30 on Sunday, started eating around 5:30 on Wednesday evening. And that all seemed to go fine, but it did put me eating at the end of the day in a more heavy way. I don't know if it was that or something I ate, you know, was a little rotten or something. My wife had wanted to try some chicharrones that were white cheddar. So I got some. And she smelled them. She didn't think they smelled good, but had like tried one or two, and she thought they tasted bad, so she quit. So I said, well, I'll try them. And so I had taken out one and tasted it. It wasn't great. I mean, it didn't seem to be spoiled, but it wasn't great. I don't know if it was that or if it was something else. I don't know. But I've kind of had a little bit of an upset stomach all day, but it has been moving. So it's like, well, okay, maybe it's just working its way through. So I have been kind of eating in faith that things are going to clear up by tomorrow morning and that everything's going to be fine, and we'll see. So yeah, it's a little bit of an odd feeling, so I really don't, you know, I'm not really sure. It doesn't feel like food poisoning necessarily. I have been taking a little heavier doses of creatine. Who knows? Maybe some of that, once I came off it, it was, you know, I didn't do any creatine for the 72 hours, so I need to talk to ChatGPT and see if that can cause a problem. Anyways, we'll get it figured out. It'll be fine. So this week's been a good week. I got the cover done on the Lord's Prayer book. I got all the files uploaded. I am waiting for the production proof to come in, and once I get that in, I'll go ahead and order the beta copies for the Lord's Prayer, and then get some beta readers together, and we'll go from there. And now I'm starting to get organized on the Still Whispers Wisdom book, which is just examining some of the parables. Because there are multiple parables that Jesus starts where he says, the kingdom of heaven is like. And so he defines this parable as describing in some way the kingdom of heaven. And my opinion is that he's always describing some activity of the kingdom of heaven, some action that reveals the nature of the kingdom of heaven. So given that, I'm going to focus on those parables for the most part. And then there are parables which are adjacent to the kingdom of heaven narrative. And here, I'm going to turn here and then go down the other direction. Buffin Lane. I didn't even realize this was down here. I'm kind of wandering around in a different part of the northern area beyond Springfield. Springfield's far north, I used to call it when I had an internet business. So I'm going to focus on those first, the ones that are a direct analogy in the kingdom to something in the kingdom. And then there are other parables which are kingdom adjacent. The kingdom of heaven is mentioned in them, or it's something about the coming of the kingdom. And then I'm going to have another section that are just the parables that I just find really fascinating or really important. Hold on a minute. Just a second, I'll call you back. All is well there. We're puttering along, everything's good. The costumes are fine, still working on Mr. Potato Head. And, I've got most of it done. I'm not certain that I'm finished with the hat yet. I came up with another solution for the hat that I don't know I'm happy with. It might not be quite as stable as I would like it to be. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see, we'll see, we'll see. Then once I get finished with that, then the next big project is going to be Halloween. Yay! My jury excuse has been granted. I've only been asked to serve on jury duty a couple of times in my lifetime. And I tell them the same thing every time. I tell them I am a sole proprietor. If I don't work, I don't bill. And I have businesses that rely on me, and I simply can't be flat out unavailable. So the last time this happened was decades ago. Well, I just got another jury notice. They wanted me to serve on the jury, and so I went on. I gave them that same explanation again. I have a truck that's coming in with a big, long line of hay bales on it. Go back forward now. So, you know, all is well there. I think I have a different way of getting the hat taken care of, and so I'm gonna try on what I have, which was kind of an inner helmet that's just magnets locked to the hat, but I just taped them on with Gorilla duct tape, but there's still a lot of rocking in it, so I'll figure something else out. Maybe I'll put it on, see what happens, and then I'll start on the Halloween costume. So there's that. I think that's about it. My beloved is, we're slowly getting through all of the things. We did go see a doctor. I think I mentioned this last week about her back and her ruptured disc. And it's been a week, and they still haven't scheduled her for any physical therapy. So, you know, that's not good. It would be nice to get the physical therapy started, but so far, no luck. But at some point, it'll get started, hopefully. Wow, it is really coming down now. Hopefully we'll get that started, and hopefully that will help. I'm trying to raise my voice a little bit so I can be heard over the rain. And weirdly enough, whatever this stomach thing is that I'm having, it's also affected my vocal cords. So I don't know what's going on there. Hopefully by tomorrow morning, I will be right as rain. It is Cat Day this weekend, International Cat Day, so I'm wearing the quasi-Catwoman costume, but I'm actually an agent of Riff Raff, which is an organization that goes after the really bad cats, the bad stray cats in the world. So that's always fun. But I'd like to be out of all this by tomorrow. But we'll do whatever we need to do. So this week, I had come across a podcaster that was looking at the philosopher Schopenhauer and his comments on men and women and relationships. The podcaster was Kate Willett. Spelled K-A-I-T, and Willett is W-I-L-L-E-T-T, and she's very enjoyable. I mean, she deals with a lot of interesting topics, and of course she's dealing with what is the prevalent topic now between men and women, and that is that women are reporting that the men are just quote-unquote not trying anymore. They're not approaching, they're just going off and enjoying themselves, you know, spending time together and playing video games and sticking to themselves in the bars and not trying to get their phone numbers, not trying to date. And the women are kind of bummed about this because they want to be approached, even though for the most part they're going to reject any guy who's going to approach them. So it's this kind of weird, you know, time when we have over 50% of young people are single, and a startling percentage has never had like a true relationship with anyone. And Kate Willett was reviewing what Schopenhauer, I think his name is, had to say about relationships between men and women. And how that the things that he says seem prescient. You know, it seems like he had spent enough time thinking about this and what would be the natural consequences of the environment that he could see forming up. And I think he was like in the 1800s or something. But he could already kind of see the path that was happening. And
he had some observations.
I think, you know, they're interesting observations and they're worth at least talking about. Whether they are the ultimate truth or not, or whether they're some nuance of the truth, I think everyone's going to have their opinions on. But it's worthwhile enough that, you know, I thought, oh, this was kind of interesting. We should talk about this. So he had, to begin with, the kind of basic facts that he had laid out. Arthur Schopenhauer, I guess is his name, 1877 through 1860, German philosopher. He was best known for his pessimistic views of human existence. So in 1851, he published an essay titled On Women, one of his most controversial works. Honestly, when I read through these things that he was claiming, these don't seem that controversial to me. But
first thing he claimed
was that nature's primary goal is reproduction. Yeah, I believe that. When you're just looking at the base systems, if those base systems cannot reproduce, then whatever segment of life exists that cannot reproduce is going to stop existing. That's pretty simple. So he believed that human beings were called, were driven by what he called the will to live. This unconscious force pushes people towards survival and reproduction, often without their realizing it. Now, I wouldn't quite say that. I think we each have a will to survive, but then I also think we have machinery that is built in, that is different between men and women, that is a system that is encoded by hormones that influence our minds and drive us in certain directions at a very, very deep level. So, you know, part of this, when he says that nature's goal is reproduction, I think certainly there is a design with us, within us, that is designed to create babies. That's the only way the species survives, is if we're creating babies. He also argued that men and women evolved for different roles. And, you know, I don't see any problem with that. He generalized to say that in general, on average, men are generally more suited for long-term planning, invention, philosophy, politics, and intellectual pursuit, and women are naturally oriented toward caring for children and managing the family. Okay, well, he's speaking in generalities, but on average, in general, men do seem to be more interested in building things, in creating things, in possessing things, and women are generally, on average, more interested in relationships with others. The third thing he said is that attraction is not entirely rational. I think that's pretty straightforward. Fourth was that men and women value different characteristics. In his words, men on average in general seek youth, beauty, fertility, and health. Women seek strength, security, confidence, ability to provide resources. That's pretty straightforward. Fifth, he believed that love clouds judgment. You know, yeah. That men often idealize women. He believed that relationships involve competing interests, which I have seen that. And his views were controversial, even in his own time. Today, many scholars describe parts of On Women as misogynistic because it is sweeping generalizations and dismissive conclusions. Okay, well, I haven't read it, so I couldn't say one way or another, but it is quite possible and quite easy as a man to look at the different approaches that women take and judge them to be inferior. I mean, that's easy to do. So perhaps he does that in there. ChatGPT was kind enough to tell me about what modern research has partial parallels in to Schopenhauer's ideas. And those things include biology influences attraction, hormones affects behavior, physical appearance matters in attraction. Doesn't matter how much people deny it, physical appearance matters in attraction. Resources and stability can influence partner choice. And people often make emotional rather than purely rational relationship decisions. I mean, you know, all of that seems like that seems straightforward. ChatGPT summarized by saying Schopenhauer correctly anticipated some ideas that later appeared in evolutionary psychology, such as the role of biology and attraction and the possibility that romantic love serves reproductive functions. However, his broader conclusions about women are not accepted as established fact. Most modern psychologists view human relationship as a product of both biology and environment, with substantial individual variation rather than rigid rules for men and women. Okay, well, I happen to be of the opinion that, you know, you can get a fur piece with just beginning with a starting place of the basic difference between men and women. Like, if you just say there's a spectrum and it runs from lust to fear, you can pretty accurately, not conclusively, not exclusively, pretty accurately look at that spectrum and realize that more men are going to cluster around lust than fear, and more women are going to cluster around fear than lust. And I think that's a direct result of testosterone and estrogen and other associated hormones. That's, for me, it's a direct result of those two things. So if you're trying to diagnose an issue, if you're trying to understand better a member of the opposite sex, you really need to understand the hormonal load that they're carrying and how that is influencing them as they move through life. You just have to understand that. So anyways, that's kind of the background of Schopenhauer and his basic ideas. But the lady that I was listening to on YouTube, she was working off of a different book that he had created, And the predictions that she was talking about were predictions that he had made about where things had the potential kind of going wrong. And he tried to predict what he felt like the steady state was, where things would kind of work, and then what he saw as growing movements that in his mind were going to cause problems. And, you know, it's interesting to see what he was talking about so many years ago. So in his mind, he had this concept of something that he called sexual honor. And he did not approach it from a moral framework. He just approached it from practicality. And he felt like that if women gave up their social honor, there would be consequences to that. That by embracing this idea of social honor, women could stand in solidarity in a kind of esprit de corps that would actually improve their circumstances. And so his philosophy was that women should generally withhold sex outside of committed relationships. Men, therefore, would have to offer marriage, provision and protection, and long-term responsibility. Women would reinforce the arrangement collectively by socially condemning women who broke the norm. It's starting to get loud again. So, Schopenhauer believed that if women presented a united front so that men had to assume responsibility for women and their children, that the entire society would be strengthened. And again, he wasn't saying this from a religious perspective. He was simply saying this as part of a practical argument for how to build strong societies. So, you know, I guess Schopenhauer also kind of went on to say, maybe it's the video presenter, Kate Willett. I think what she was saying in the video is that the abandonment of these ideas or the natural progression away from these ideas, Schopenhauer's ideas, has had concrete results. And she was saying that, one, there's less commitment. So when sex becomes more readily available without marriage, men have less incentive to offer lifetime commitment. Why should they? They can get what they want just in a one night stand. Two, she said, you have less stable fatherhood because you have less commitment, you have less sticking around, and father absence and less stable households is the result for children. Also, it results in reduced collective leverage for women. So individual women gain greater sexual freedom, but women collectively lost the bargaining power that came from insisting upon commitment before sex. And she said that leads to less trust between men and women because both enter dating with uncertain expectations. Men may fear rejection, humiliation, or accusations of inappropriate behavior, while women complain that men no longer approach or commit. And then finally, you have desire without restraint. So you have pornography and hookup apps and online attention provide stimulation without requiring sacrifice, responsibility, or genuine intimacy. The presenter gave this as an example of Schopenhauer's broader belief that human desire must be restrained by social structures. That's interesting. AI summarized the conclusion of the presenter that society has torn down the old system's load-bearing walls, marriage expectations, exclusivity, shame, and mutual obligations, but failed to build a healthier replacement. The result, she argues, is a greater theoretical freedom, but more loneliness, mistrust, unstable relationships, and consumption of sexuality without connection. So, I think there's some good points there. And I might include some of that in my book when I get around to writing the book on biology and appearance and sex and all those things, because the situation that we have now is not ideal. I don't think it serves men well. I don't think it serves women well. And certainly, if you look at the birth rates are plummeting across all of the industrialized nations. And that can't go on for long without it has some serious consequences. And we are already seeing some of those serious consequences in places like Japan and Korea, that the birth rate is just not good. And there's just no replacement coming, and so the whole population is just going to keep aging, and there'll be less and less children, and that's not sustainable. So it's pretty interesting. And I think that's all I have to say about that. This is Phil Farron, and I am hoping that we are actually going to get our power back soon. Have a great day, everyone.